I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Deontay Johnson is a Carolina Panther in a pretty straightforward trade here. Aiden Winks, the Panthers deal away cornerback Dante Jackson and a sixth round pick, 178. Get in return Deontay Johnson, who has 1 year left on his deal, and then a seventh round pick. So they basically drop back 62 spots here and get the best wide receiver on their team.
By a wide margin. I'm curious why Deontay Johnson's price tag wasn't higher than this. Like they're... The Steelers are eating money. The Panthers are signing him for basically a one-year, $10 million contract. We've talked about players like Darnell Mooney and Gabe Davis making more than that for more seasons in a row. So I was kind of confused that like this was all it took to get Deontay Johnson. What's up with that? Is either he overrated in fantasy land, or is this just a fantastic deal for the Panthers, or is it that Deontay Johnson just really wanted out of Pittsburgh, which I would understand?
Well, so... multiple points to hit on there. First one from beat writer Mark Caboli. 100% Deontay Johnson wanted this trade, like I said, 2 weeks ago. So there's that aspect of it. It's weird. Dante Jackson was going to get cut by the Carolina Panthers. Mm-hmm. They were not going to pay his roster bonus that was coming up in a few days. They mentioned his name out there with NFL reporters as basically like, hey, if you want him, let's swap picks. And then now, once again, the Panthers get Deontay Johnson, and that's basically for $10 million this year. I will say it. Other than Calvin Ridley, I think Deontay Johnson would have been the best wide receiver on the free agent market. Do you think that's a wild take?
I think I'd rather have Hollywood, but Deontay, I understand the love for him. He's a very inconsistent player. Like right before we went live and went back and watched him, and he's undersized, which means that at the catch point, there are lapses. I also thought that he would not be on the same page with his quarterback at times as well. But all the other parts of his game are true. Like this guy, his tempoing and his ability to cut at the route is fantastic. And that's why he gets open so often. Do you think that there's also a reason why his like yards per target and stuff is down and why he's fairly inconsistent year over year? But he is by far the biggest upgrade the Panthers have made on offense since Bryce Young has been drafted.
Totally. I know he's not your typical frame at 5'11 and 186 pounds, but he has played a whole bunch of snaps as an X wide receiver, you know, as the isolated wide receiver on the line of scrimmage and asked you to win against your man one-on-one. On all of these snaps, let me ask you to, I know so many of you watched the Carolina Panthers last season. Who on the Panthers can do any of this stuff? Who on the Panthers can threaten a cornerback vertically and then on a three-way go be able to turn on a dime and create all of that separation? No one. In fact, the complete and total lack of vertical speed and verticality of any wide receiver on the team put a ceiling on these pass catchers at about 10 yards on the field, and corners and safeties were sitting on everything. So that just condensed every single passing play over and over again. And then plus, if there was tight coverage, you couldn't have players who create sliver of spaces, and constantly there were corners in the pockets of their opposition. Now, as you're pointing out here, like Deontay Johnson is not a perfect player. And I think immediately what pops into the public's head is what happened in the 2020 season when he had 15 drops attributed to his name. He had 8 drops in 2021, 8 drops in 2022. This past season, that declined that number. But look, drops can be bad, especially when they happen at the most inopportune times. But more importantly is, to me, the consistent part of his game is creating that separation and sustaining it, mm-hmm. and really winning in those basketball-esque mm-hmm. isolated movements, crossovers, as you said, the tempo of his routes. And that's tough to find. That is tough mm-hmm. to find for dropping 70 spots in the draft in the sixth to the seventh round. and for just $10 million next year.
It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know why he was traded for this little, but the Panthers should be relieved. He'll be the X wide receiver for this season. They'll add Adam Thielen in the slot, and then I think it's going to be a competition for the second outside wide receiver spot. And I don't think, because this currently is a 1 year, $10 million deal, we'll see if the Panthers do an extension long term with him. This does not prevent the Carolina Panthers for drafting another wide receiver with these two top 40 picks now that they have with the Brian Burns trade. So I think that they need some size now, like Adam Thielen and Deontay Johnson. They can do some fun things in the intermediate and shallow parts of the field. We've seen Deontay win vertically on the sideline as well, but they need somebody in the red zone that can go crazy here to kind of match their identity, what they did with the offensive line in the interior in free agency. So I think that Deontay Johnson is a great first addition here, but this wide receiver group needed multiple additions, and I think that the second one is going to be coming in the draft.
This is exactly what we talked about when we discussed what the Carolina Panthers need to do heading into this year, is go from awful to average in a whole bunch of spots, right? You can't go and aim for Mike Evans immediately or T. Higgins immediately. You kind of have to take the worst wide receiver room in the NFL and get to average with it. Mm-hmm. You've done that, hopefully better than that, at the guard center guard combination this past season too. Look, this is from Matt Harmon, who charts basically every single wide receiver under the sun. I want to reiterate that this is 2022 and not 2023, which, by the way, for the Pittsburgh Steelers, fire defensive coordinator, or excuse me, offensive coordinator, you go through some quarterback turmoil at the same time. We can get into a little bit of maybe why they didn't want Deontay Johnson here in a second, but just some quotes here from Matt Harmon. Simply put, Deontay Johnson is one of the best separators in the NFL. He doesn't just fall into massive targets here every year. He earns that volume because he's almost always open. There's no route Deontay Johnson can't run. There's no area of the field he can't dominate as a route runner. Again, for $10 million and a drop in 70 picks. This is a great, great move by Dan Morgan and Dave Canales here.
We've seen Deontay kind of have some blow-up spots on the sideline at times, and this seems like there's always been something in the media with him, so I wonder if like that is one of the reasons why both sides wanted to leave Pittsburgh. So, yeah, I'm with Matt on that. Separation, he can run every single route from a bunch of different alignments, all that stuff. I wish he was a little bit stronger and more physical at the catch point. Like, that is his weakness right now.
I think he has another weakness where it comes to his strength on top of that, and it's after the catch. Like, he goes down often.
Yeah.
On first contact, he has some boneheaded plays after the catch too.
That fumble on the sideline. Do you see that one?
What was that? Sometimes he tries to do too much. Right. Sometimes he will try to run south instead of going north.
Sure.
You know, the name of his game in this offense is going to be, hey, create separation and win, because even if he just catches the ball and falls, that is much better than a bunch of the wide receivers could do on the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah. Give him the Tyler Lockett plan and see what happens. That'd be a great first step.
Now, what if, Hayden? I know that they're spending $10 million here, but actually, it's only about $3 million more than what Dante Jackson was eating up here. And by the way, again, Dante Jackson was off this roster. Just make another splash and go and try to get Hollywood Brown on top of this. And that would be a really, really fun grouping.
It would be. That'd be pretty tiny for my liking. Yeah. But like, they throw shit at the wall.
I guess
like anything happens. But the other thing I was going to say, the wide receiver trade market, make it make sense. Amari Cooper goes for what? A fifth round pick. This is free. This is basically free. You said,
and then Chase Claypool goes for a second round pick.
Right. Like, what? Marquise Brown goes for a first round pick. Like, what are we just making shit up? Like, seriously, like,
yeah, I mean, it's all based on what someone is willing to pay, you know, it's all based on what someone is willing to pay.
It doesn't make sense. It's not based off the production or the film. It's about vibes, I guess.
There must have been something behind the scenes too in Pittsburgh where, you know, keeping Deontay Johnson, not even for this season, when you're switching to a new quarterback, when you're switching to a new offensive coordinator, and now it's basically George Pickens, Pat Freiermuth, Darnell Washington, and Calvin Austin. And we'll see what the Steelers do after this. But, you know, at the very least, Deontay Johnson's a serviceable player. And you would have thought that Mike Tomlin and Arthur Smith and company would have wanted this. But again, it sounds like Deontay Johnson just wanted to get out of here. And maybe I highly doubt that they immediately give him a contract, but maybe he knew that his future was not in Pittsburgh and he wanted to get a head start on that.
Interesting. Yeah. The other thing I think with, we talked about in the Russell Wilson video, a lot of play action, and obviously Arthur Smith has used multiple tight ends. I do wonder if the Steelers were always going to add another wide receiver, and then Deontay didn't know if he was going to be in these two wide receiver sets, which the Steelers could have a bunch next year. So obviously this trade, for how little the Steelers got in return here, they have massive holes at wide receiver. They already cut Allen Robinson, who wasn't like that much of a factor anyways, but we're assuming George Pickens is going to take this leap. I love George Pickens attached to Russ Wilson, but the number two wide receiver at this point is up for grabs. So maybe it's like Brian Thomas Jr. in the first round, something like that. But this also, like you're saying, this is a corner that was going to be cut. They still need a second corner for the Steelers too. So they just like lost a starting wide receiver and probably didn't fill a starting cornerback spot with this type of player too. So it was an interesting decision. I think probably the answer with this, when it doesn't make sense, is there are off-field reasons on why something wasn't working, and we'll see if we get the details of those.
But somehow Mike Tomlin is still going to win 9 games next year. Joe Mixon is a Houston Texan. Gets traded, we believe, for a late round pick swap after his old Cincinnati Bengals sign Zach Moss. He's dangling out there. I believe he'll get a 1-year, $6 million contract here with the Houston Texans, a team who also lost Devin Singletary yesterday. Hayden, let's talk about the fit. What do you think Joe Mixon brings to the table with this up-and-coming Texans team?
So $6 million is a little bit less than Aaron Jones, a little bit more than Devin Singletary and Austin Eckler and that type, which seems appropriate. Joe Mixon's not the same explosive rusher as he was when he was a little bit younger here, but I also don't think he's totally washed. And I actually think the fit here is highly intriguing. As you'll see with some of these clips here, I like Joe Mixon under center running right at you. I think when you give him opportunities where he can dance on the perimeter and stuff, I think that he can kind of get caught up in that. I think that he's a very tough tackle. And if you look historically back in 2021, that was a season where he had the most under center right at you carries in the Bengals offense. That happened to be by far his most productive season. Same thing with 2019 as well. The last couple of years, the Bengals have used a lot more shotgun because they have someone like Joe Burrow who they just want to spread the ball all around the yard. The Texans last year were the fourth highest team when it comes to under center runs. That's because CJ Stroud in the deep play action game could absolutely dice you up with Nico Collins and Tank Dell. You need to be able to run under center. And I think that Joe Mixon is exactly what the Texans needed, him and Derrick Henry. But if Derrick Henry was too expensive, I understand why you'd want to go with Joe Mixon.
Just incredible notes from Hayden Winks. And you and I never share what we're going to say on these videos before we record them. I wanted to bring up the exact same point of these under center runs, because as we know, Joe Burrow had like changed and altered the offense where he just wanted to see everything and not turn his back. And so they stopped doing under center play action where he turns his head to the defense. And as we saw last year, this Bengals team, especially near the goal line on those shotgun runs, were getting stuffed over and over and over again because they were allowing instant penetration. I think because of also the Joe Burrow injury, the underlying metrics for Joe Mixon were absolutely horrible last year. I mean, he was 48th of 55 qualifiers in missed tackles forced per attempt. He was also 48th of 55 qualifiers in yards after contact per attempt. You know, though, who was even worse in both of those metrics was Damian Pierce, now his teammate with the Houston Texans. Now, again, we mentioned the weirdness that came with the Bengals last year. When you lose your starting quarterback for so long, you have to change and alter everything. What happened with Houston Texans last year is so many offensive line injuries to open the season. I mean, Laremy Tunsil missing. They were moving their right tackle to guard. They were moving their centers to guards. They were playing three or four centers throughout the season. And then Damian Pierce gets a high ankle sprain. And as the offensive line got healthier, as obviously this team with a new coordinator and pieces hit their stride, Devin Singletary became like a super relevant player.
Yes.
And obviously Devin Singletary is now a New York Giant, but zooming out, Joe Mixon is a more talented player than Devin Singletary is, despite these worst metrics from this last season. And so I'm excited to see him in an offense that has a very particular style of play. And Hayden, maybe you can speak to why the nerds get so frustrated with Bobby Slowick and his first and second down run rate when they just want, you know, CJ Stroud, the public does, to throw the football 65 times a game.
Well, last year the Texans were 26th in rushing EPA, and they were like at times top five in passing EPA. And the frustrating part with the Texans offense last year is they were 29th in short yardage rushing success. And maybe a little bit of that is because Devin Singletary, maybe Joe Mixon could upgrade a little bit of that. But to me, is your point about the Texans interior offensive line, all the guys that missed were like early draft picks. We're talking first and second round players. They had to move Titus Howard from right tackle into the guard spot. That made the right tackle spot interesting. But if this offensive line can get healthier this season, I think there's still a chance they could even draft another offensive lineman pretty high. I think this can go from one of the worst offensive lines in the league to potentially next year being a very strong foundational piece. And I do think that the Joe Mixon numbers and the Texans rushing numbers in general could increase as the offensive line hopefully gets healthier. So like you said, Devin Singletary was relevant in fantasy. According to Fantasy Points over replacement last year, he was the 100th overall player. I think that's a starting point for Joe Mixon. I know that he's older. I know that the per carry numbers are not up to standard, but I do think that the environment that Joe Mixon is heading into is actually better than what it was with the Bengals last year. The Texans obviously on the up and up, and I think that the Texans rushing numbers will look way different this next season because the interior offensive line should be way healthier.
You know, Joe Mixon led the NFL in carries inside the 10-yard line last year. Led the NFL. 38. Only 8 of them went for touchdowns. Yeah. And again, a major part of that was the instant disruption they were allowing and then shotgun runs, and then also, you know, being attached to Jake Browning in condensed fields and probably believing that running the football is a safer option in that area. I do not get upset like the nerds out there about Bobby Slowick and the first and second down run rate as much, because I think it kind of is this entire cohesive package where they have these, you know, condensed splits, extra tight ends. They love to shift out fullbacks and tight ends all over the place. And to me, I understand that you don't have to be successful in the run game to have play action concepts, but maybe, just maybe, utilizing the run game from those same formations allows for these 17, 25, 35 yard completions on two man routes down the field. That's what I think that happens. Just a case, just, you know, maybe. I
mean, or CJ Stroud in the dropback game, just let him figure it out even without play action, probably still going to be fantastic. But I hear you.
I feel like in the world of streaming services, it is very easy to forget that you subscribe to a platform for just one show, one event, one game, and then get charged over and over and over again. We've all been there after checking our monthly bank statement, and that's just the start of the process. After that, you have to find out where to cancel, how to cancel. Click on this button, that button, email this person, that person. But now there is one easy way to take care of all of that. It is Rocket Money. It shows you all of your subscriptions in one place and then cancels them for you, whichever ones you do not want. And in fact, Rocket Money can find subscriptions you did not even know you were paying for. That's like an extra, you know, 5, 10, 15 bucks that you found in your couch cushion. Again, Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and helps save its members an average of $720 a year, with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. So, stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/underdog. That is rocketmoney.com/underdog. rocketmoney.com/underdog. Today's episode is brought to you by Surfshark. You all know my obsession, Aston Villa Football Club, the greatest team in the world. Unfortunately, sometimes, because I live in Brooklyn, sitting in this apartment, I can't see specific content that is made around the club, that is geared towards Europe, that is geared towards Great Britain. Those are geo-restricted. And that, my friends, is where a VPN comes in, and that is where Surfshark comes in. It can seem like I am sitting in a coffee shop in the heart of Birmingham, England, so I can watch the highlights or the commentary of Douglas Luiz curling a shot in the top right corner, or Leon Bailey putting three defenders on the grass with his 1, 2, 3 crossover moves. And it extends beyond that. Can't see a YouTube video because of your location? Use Surfshark VPN. Do you want a larger library of Netflix movies to access, like in Canada? Use Surfshark VPN. It's totally risk-free with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And on top of that, if you enter coupon code UNDERDOG, for an extra 3 months. They will give you an extra 3 months free so you can secure your privacy with Surfshark. Just go to surfshark.deals/underdog. Go and use it. It's super easy.
I think Joe Mixon in this offense is very exciting because I think we're going to see even more outside zone from him, get to the corner store, turn it up the field. Are you surprised, though, with where the Texans entered this free agency cycle, top five, top six in money to spend, that we haven't seen bigger splashes from this team that was like on the cusp of it last year, despite a slow start? And they're obviously not going all in, but they're really slow playing this.
Mm-hmm. I thought they were going to be more aggressive, but then like last year, they made so many small free agent deals last season. So maybe they're just being patient. There's still other players that can be traded for, like Marshawn Lattimore later in the offseason, for example, could be a spot at corner for the Texans. So we'll see. They still have a ton of money here. So I think that this is one of the moves they'll make. I think there a bunch are coming, and maybe they're just trying to be a little bit more patient while teams get very greedy early on. But I thought Christian Wilkins, for example, defense tackle, I thought he was going to be in play for the Texans as well.
Like Saquon or Derrick Henry could have been an option here. And
right.
Like Joe Mixon is, you know, in that next grouping along probably with like Tony Pollard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting. I wanted Saquon to the Texans for a little while, but the Texans like this north-south rushing style, and Saquon Barkley is a little bit different style running back. So like if you're not getting Derrick Henry, get Joe Mixon, and maybe we might get lucky and Derrick Henry goes to like the Baltimore Ravens or something like that, and it'll still be very fun for him.
Anything else you want to say about Joe Mixon and the Bengals here?
Last two seasons, it hasn't been pretty. All the efficiency numbers, right? He's finished 21st overall and 35th overall in fantasy points over replacement. So running back efficiency only swings things so much. Like think about it. Like if you average 4 yards per carry or 3.5 yards per carry, if you have 200 attempts, that's only adding like one or two fantasy points per game. It's all about touchdowns. It's all about the amount of volume you get, and then also the pass game as well. Mixon will not get the pass game as much here, I don't think, but the touchdown certainly will be there, and I think the volume is guaranteed to be there. He should have some of the most carries in the NFL this year.
On the pass game note, Joe Mixon definitely has plenty of production in that area, 64 targets, 75 targets over the last two seasons, and especially back in 2022. That was without pure passing situations. That was without third downs because he would just come off the field for Samaje Perine and pass pro work. He can still get pass game usage on first and second down.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's not just only limited to third down work, pure passing situations. Mm-hmm. And even that, maybe this Houston Texans coaching staff might trust him more in that mold than the Bengals previously did prior to 2023.
I would not be surprised if the Texans find a third down type of back here. If like Samaje Perine gets released, maybe link them back up again somewhere in the draft as well. Because I think Dameon Pierce is like, I hope that Joe Mixon does not turn into what we thought with Dameon Pierce and the same exact offense here. But I think those two have like exact skill set overlaps. And I think that they could add a pure passing down back to this team.
I will say the Dameon Pierce unfolding over the last year still boggles my mind a little bit because his underlying numbers as a rookie were sensational.
Right.
And then every single thing that was written or said by D'Amico Ryans about D'Amico Ryans and Bobby Slowick, that Dameon Pierce is going to be the foundation of this rushing attack. And then obviously, as we talked about, weird start to the season, injury, and then Devin Singletary just simply playing football better. So, and now you mix it on top of it. It does happen, especially at the running back position. All right. The Cincinnati Bengals have their new running back, and it's Zach Moss, a 2-year, $8 million deal. I believe this has $3 million in guarantees, so it's basically just a 1-year contract if the Bengals want it to be so. On the opposite end, we know that they sent Joe Mixon to the Houston Texans for a 7th-round pick. Hayden.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
On some level, sure, they saved a couple million dollars. But on the other side of this, Did the Cincinnati Bengals just choose Zach Moss over Joe Mixon?
More or less so, because Zach Moss has $4.5 million due this year. Joe Mixon, they saved $6 million. So who really cares about $1.5 million? Because the Bengals weren't in like cap hell either.
Right.
So I think that they just preferred Zach Moss, the rusher. Maybe they didn't. They were over the Joe Mixon off-field experience, which I understand would get tiring out there. But I think that when you have Chase Brown as the number two back, and he's offers a lot of juice, a lot of manufactured juice, to be honest, like in the screen game, for example. I think Zach Moss is the exact opposite of that. And he's a very reliable rusher. I think last year we saw the best of him. I think his vision's good. I think he's hard to tackle. He had some explosive runs in that offense. It's not that he's really fast. I just think that he has good cutback vision. And when all things were done, Next Gen Stats said that he was the running back five.
Yep.
In rushing yards over expected. So pretty good season.
He had 20 explosive runs, and a lot of those came when Jonathan Taylor was missing in the first part of the season. I mean, honestly, Zach Moss's 2023 kind of came out of nowhere. At Utah, he dealt with a whole bunch of injuries. I think it was like a hernia or a shoulder.
Leg issues.
Yeah. He was a force miss tackles machine. And so like PFF loved him. Some other people did. But, you know, he's never had more than 112 carries in a single year. During his time with Buffalo, he was part of that Nyheim Hines deal, I believe, with the Indianapolis Colts. And then, yeah, we get to this year. He still dealt with like a broken hand. So we didn't know if he was a true backup first option with Jonathan Taylor. And then he was. And then he goes out there and just like tears it up against some really good defenses. Like we just showed the Baltimore Ravens defense. He had 30 carries for 122 yards. Then other games of, you know, 23 for 165 against the Tennessee Titans run defense. There were some incredible moments. And where I think it really stands out, where Zach Moss is going to fit in with this team, out of shotgun and 11 personnel. Obviously, the Colts did a lot of that with Gardner Minshew last year. That's where the Bengals live in. He was sixth in yards per carry, ninth in missed tackles forced per attempt, 11th in yards after contact per attempt, and had the fourth most explosive runs in the league last year. And that wasn't even close to being a full-time starter in some of those counting stats. So that is a perfect one-to-one copy that Zach Taylor and company said, oh, he did this so well, and that's all we do. He can do that at a much higher rate for us too.
And if you guys watched the Joe Mixon version of this video, we talked about how Joe Mixon, his comfortability and the under center runs, and we basically have flip-flopped Joe Mixon and Zach Moss now. So I'm with you. I think that Zach Moss is going to be the early down guy. He's going to be the goal line back as well. I think that they're going to try to get Chase Brown, who, according to The Athletic, quote, the Bengals want to expand his role. That's Chase Brown, fifth round pick, all athlete, in my opinion, still kind of getting a better feel for how football is played. Like, for example, Chase Brown, he only had like four or five real pass protection reps the entire season. When I watched them, he had a holding call on one of them. He whiffed on another one. So I don't think that you can trust Chase Brown. You can trust Zach Moss. So ultimately, I've gone back and forth in my rankings. I'm going to have Zach Moss a tier or two ahead of Chase Brown, even though Chase Brown in a race would beat Zach Moss. I just think that the running back position is more than what we just see at the combine.
Yeah, speaking of pass protection, I think PFF's grades can be greatly skewed if you give up a sack or if you have one bad rep.
I don't like PFF's run block or run or pass protection grades for the running backs. It just seems like it's too volatile.
It can be super skewed based on one or two individual plays. With that said, I'm going to throw some at you because Zach Moss graded as the 11th best running back last year in pass pro. And we know that really since Samaje Perine, they haven't had like one player that they totally trust. They did bring back Trevion Williams in a small deal, but I really think that this backfield is going to be Zach Moss and Chase Brown, unless something does happen towards the NFL draft. And yeah, you mentioned it. He ran a 4.65 electronic time at the NFL combine, Zach Moss did. And we saw him have some runs of 30, 40, 50 yards against, again, great defenses like the Baltimore Ravens. So I'm not saying he is one of the most explosive running backs in the league. I am saying that he has explosive plays in him, especially out of those shotgun runs, that it's almost like a stop start mentality. He like looks super patient near the line of scrimmage, then cuts off his blocks and then reads obviously pullers and things of the sort at the second level quite well.
I think that he could press the line of scrimmage, get the linebackers and safeties to really suck up in the middle, and then he kind of bounces it outside. So I think that's how he makes up for the speed. The stop start, I agree, patient runner. So I think the Bengals, I think there's probably over the Joe Mixon off-field experience. I think it's ultimately probably what this comes down to, but Zach Moss will benefit in Fantasyland.
And, I mean, he even had games of 7 targets and 6 receptions against the Jacksonville Jaguars, 8 targets and 4 receptions against the Cincinnati Bengals defense. I will add, sometimes you see players sign on teams that destroyed them in previous years. That was not the case, despite how bad that Bengals defense was last year. He had 13 carries for just 28 yards, again, to go along with those 8 targets. Okay.
Interesting.
Noah Fant is sticking with the Seattle Seahawks. It's a new era, new regime in Seattle. Mike McDonald, head coach. More importantly, Ryan Grubb, offensive coordinator coming from Washington. Hey, and this is the first video we've discussed of a player being retained by the team. Why are we picking Noah Fant?
Well, new offense, but more importantly, the competition's all gone. He only played 50% of the snaps last year because Will Dissly is like goaded in terms of blocking. Yeah. And then Colby Parkinson, who I also want to talk about in this video, is one of the most underrated tight ends. Both of those guys I just mentioned got starting level money in free agency on other teams. So now Noah Fant goes from 50% snaps potentially to 75%, 80% snaps. When I went back and watched his tape, I was reminded about how much of a freak athlete he is. Now, it's taken a little bit of time. He's still only 26. You're Mr. Second Team, second contract. We're getting there. Just watch a couple of these highlights from Noah Fant here and name the other tight ends across the league that have this movement ability. So this is an upside play in fantasy late rounds, certainly. But I think that Geno Smith with a vertical version of Noah Fant could be the sleeper guy of the year.
He's going to be everyone's favorite late round tight end this year. And we can look at this from a few different angles. One, Ryan Grubb, obviously coming from the University of Washington, a super high powered offense. At the college level, we know Rome Odunze lit it up, 92 receptions for him. Jalen Polk will also get drafted in this draft class, 69 receptions, third on their team. Jack Westover with 46 receptions. Watching Michael Penix and Odunze's film, the dude in Ryan Grubb loves to throw out motions and condense sets and work down the field. And it's very much a pro style offense in terms of creativity and formations. And I'm sure he watched the same exact highlight reel that we're watching and being like, oh, there's a toy that I could have with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and JSN. You hit the nail on the head. Anyone that watches this here program knows that I love to talk about the second contract or second team tight ends. One, this is both for Noah Fant. Let's remember he was drafted by the Denver Broncos in the first round. He was part of the Russell Wilson trade. By the way, if it was straight up Russell Wilson for Noah Fant, the Seahawks would have the better end of that. I'll just quickly list why I think that this is a legit thing. If you go back just like 10 years, okay, all these players had their best seasons on second contracts or their second teams. Delanie Walker, Greg Olsen, Martellus Bennett, Evan Engram, TJ Hockenson, David Njoku, Darren Waller, Jared Cook. I could keep going on and on and on, but that's just a few examples. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reason why is because of everything that the tight end has to do. On some plays, you have to be an offensive tackle. On some plays, you have to be a wide receiver. And it's tough and it takes a little bit. David Njoku is the best, perfect, most recent example. And maybe, just maybe, at 26 years of age, Noah Fant is that next breakout dude that we can be early on.
And back in college, his receiving production on top of his athleticism was extremely rare. Like even to this date, he's one of the highest projected prospects in my tight end model. Obviously, things have not gone to plan the first couple seasons here, but still, like you said, maybe this is the final year to get up there and see if he's a legit starter. By the way, the Seahawks gave him starter level money for two seasons here, and this mock draftable chart just gets me completely fired up.
I always think, and if you look at 1,000 yard receivers at the tight end position, doesn't happen very often. In fact, did you know back in 2020, Noah Fant was 6th among all tight ends in receiving yards? And that was at like 600 something. Wow. Get that in back-to-back years. But again, 1,000 yard receivers barely happen at the tight end position. The vast majority of them, 66%, are fantastic athletes. Another 20% are good athletes, and then 10% are bad athletes. So it helps to be a quality athlete now that we see at the tight end position. Noah Fant is certainly one of those. Okay. What do you want to say about Colby Parkinson, who signs a pretty sizable deal here with the Los Angeles Rams?
At Stanford, this guy was a walking seam ball. He is as big as a Stanford tree is. He's about 6'7". He's put on weight in the NFL. This guy can legit block, so which means that he can actually be on the field for a lot of the snaps. But for somebody that is 6'7", 260, the dude's straight line speed and vertical ability, I think, is pretty sweet. So when you're looking for the Rams, obviously, we know they're going to throw the ball a ton. We know that they're going to be very effective throwing the ball. They'll be in the red zone a ton. What do you do when you're in the red zone? You can throw the ball up to your 6'7" tight end. So I think that he's probably a name that I would say most people in fantasy don't really, they've probably never heard of Colby Parkinson unless you're in deep dynasty Twitter. Well, I think that this is the very last round in best ball if you've drafted Matthew Stafford. I think Colby Parkinson's pretty interesting. I think that the Tyler Higbee days are mostly over at this point, coming off of the torn ACL. They have a Davis Allen, who was a late round pick, kind of a finesse guy. This dude is the upside swing, and his physicality kind of stands out. And I think for a big blocking type, I think that he can kind of stretch the seam. And I think that could be a pretty good fit with Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, this ruins my Davis Allen bags, who had like one good game when he stepped in there against, I think, the Baltimore Ravens. Mm-hmm. Once Tyler Higbee got hurt and he was electric. Colby Parkinson from California. There were times when you could stick him at the end of the line and he was protecting against defensive ends in one-on-one. And as you said, he's an athlete. I want to look up actually his mock draftable chart and see how comparable it is, because I think he split some time between wide receiver two, if I'm not mistaken, there at
they would spread him out.
Ooh, yeah. Not a great athletic profile, but we'll move on.
I mean, how tall is he? He's got to be 99th percentile on the height.
Yeah, he is 96th percentile in the height. But this is fascinating to me from the Rams' perspective of, like, they opened the season last year with Tutu Atwell. They closed it with Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, and DeMarcus Robinson. Phased Tutu totally out for DeMarcus Robinson. And this just adds more size mm-hmm. and height to the equation. We just saw them invest massively in offensive guard in Jonah Jackson. They're going to be moving Steve Avila over to center at 330 pounds. Their guard center guard combination is massive, beefy dudes.
Yep.
Sean McVay, where it almost felt like early on in his career, was embracing this almost finesse style. I think they're morphing over into, I'm going to be more physical than you and bully ball you out the club.
Yeah. And then on top of that, Matthew Stafford can still sling the ball downfield. It's a fantastic combination. Then the other name, Will Disley, real quick, he goes and signs with the Chargers, which we just talked about it, just a complete blocking only tight end. This is the identity that Jim Harbaugh is trying to create with the Chargers. Will Disley and Gus Bus are the two signings they've made. What do those guys do? They run it right at you as well. No surprise there. So Gus Bus, maybe Blake Corum, but I think you're going to see, and this was kind of a sign of all the tight ends they chase Will Disley. They let Gerald Everett walk, more of a finesse guy. He joins, ironically, Shane Waldron, back up with the Bears. But you're seeing Will Disley. This is going to be the MO of the Chargers, and we're going to have to adjust for our fantasy expectations for him.
Yes, we are. Okay. If you like this video, there are plenty more on the channel you should check out in terms of reactions to free agent signings and trades at a whole bunch of number positions. So hit that subscribe button down below. Leave a thumbs up before you get out of here, and we talk to you on the next one.